Canva presents unexplained appearances. It was an ordinary workday until...
That presentation appeared out of thin air.
Also, it's eerily on brand.
Wait, did that agenda just write itself?
Words appear, making this unexplainable case...
Unexplainable? It's Canva's AI tools.
I can generate slides and words in seconds.
Really? The real mystery is why I'm only learning this now.
Canva.com. Designed for work.
One of my working theories continues to be that we need to understand the models of AI a little differently when we talk about it. So I wanted to talk to someone who not only had experience with that, but also with policymaking. Eric Daimler joins me today on this bonus episode of The Business of Tech. Are you and your clients tired of the time-consuming ticket tennis of coordinating meetings and help desk calls? Wouldn't it be better to automate this process with a tool that connects directly to ConnectWise Manage or Autotask? TimeZest offers scheduling automation that gives you complete control of your schedule and eliminates the hassle of calendar ping pong. As the only service designed specifically for MSPs, it integrates into your workflow and makes scheduling appointments easy on you and your clients. Plus, you can try TimeZest for free. Visit timezest.com/MSPradio and use the code MSPradio to get 10% off your first year of TimeZest. I'm super excited to talk to you because we're talking a ton of AI on the show, as I'm sure everybody else is these days, as we're seeing the way. But you're working on not only AI, but in robotics. Give me a little sense of where you're seeing the shift go on right now in this space.
Yeah, so generative AI certainly has taken the imagination of a wide swath of people, but we take a look that's a little farther afield in that generative AI using deterministic algorithms. So domains where you can't afford to mess up, kind of zero tolerance domains. And that could be in designing an airplane. It could be an energy discovery. It could be energy distribution. It could be a very complex supply chains for generally large organizations. That's where we are applying a type of generative artificial intelligence and where we think the future is for big organizations implementing generative AI.
Now, we've had all kinds of conversations about hallucinations and all the consumer stuff. It's allowed to be wrong sometimes because the risks are really low. You've highlighted that there are spaces where the risk is unacceptable for it to just be wildly wrong. How do you limit that? How do you make sure that it doesn't go off the rails?
It's really a fundamental shift. So there is probabilistic AI and there is deterministic AI, good old-fashioned AI, symbolic AI. It really went out of fashion in the late 80s when it was discovered that it couldn't scale. You know, even with the popularization of IBM's Watson and some fantastic accomplishments such as in games around symbolic AI and expert systems, it wasn't until discoveries in abstract math, specifically category theory and type theory, that we were able to revisit symbolic or deterministic artificial intelligence as a reasonable implemented solution for large enterprises. What Kinexys does is commercialize the software expression of those math discoveries so that these large organizations that have zero tolerance applications, such as we discovered with what's other ones in drug discovery, you can't afford to have that be approximately correct. This is where that software finds its best use.
I'm not a math guy, but at the same time, I've got a degree in computer science. I'm familiar with some of these things. But you threw out there category theory.
Yeah.
I know that's one that you've focused on. For those of us that aren't familiar with category theory, what's that?
Category theory is it's an abstract math. It doesn't need to be actually all that complicated, and to some ways it's easier than calculus. It's related to type theory, which may or may not help. So I can describe it as an extension This is not entirely true, but it's a good way to visualize it, an extension of graph theory. So a lot of people have seen graph theory, or at least the visualizations of graph theory, where you have these spider-looking webs of edges and nodes, you know, things and connected to things. Category theory is like a graph theory, but multidimensional, really n-dimensional. And the benefit of that is you can add richness to any of these connections or any of these entities. The benefit of that is that you can then have contextual relationships. This equals that, but only in a certain context. That equals this, only in a certain context. We then do that for enterprise-level applications, specifically application migrations and application upgrades, to guarantee the integrity under all circumstances.
Okay, got it. Now, one of the reasons that I like learning about these models and like the theories behind it is, as you said, I don't need to understand all of the depths, but if I'm implementing these, I need to know some basics. Now, I want to throw a premise at you, and I want to get your reaction to it. With this kind of revolution in these AIs, and they're rolling out, and all the different models and all the different products are moving out really fast, they are based on different large language models, and they are based on different models of implement, you know, data models around them and stored and processed in different ways. And that creates this variety of different options that are powering then different products. The guys over at the Tech Meme Ride Home have thrown out a theory, Brian and Chris throw out this theory that there will be like different models will be like different grapes are in wine, and you'll be able to create different, you'll view them like varietals. I like this theory because it extends really well to our space. And so I've added it in the IT services space, and I've said, like, well, if I take that idea and these models are like grapes and you have to understand the various wines, well, then the IT services company is a sommelier. They're the ones matching customers and their needs to their palate and their design. What's your reaction to that? And how much do you think the sommeliers need to know the models in this way, in this new world?
You know, I think that the sommeliers in that analogy would need to understand the uses and the limitations of some of the basic building blocks underlying these large language models. What I'm proposing is that there are many, many, many applications that will benefit from a hybrid AI, deterministic and probabilistic AI, not one or the other, because there are fantastic applications that we've seen and read about over the past couple of months for these new discoveries in probabilistic AI with large language models. But there are many other applications, such as a Fortune 50 client whose office I'm sitting in right now, who can't use that stuff because it has errors, and the errors are at unpredictable intervals, of unpredictable origin, of unpredictable consequence. So they need deterministic, fault-proof artificial intelligence. A combination of that fault-proof AI with some of this probabilistic AI in the excellent framework that you articulated is really where I see the future over the next several years.
So let's make this concrete. What's a great example of leveraging that hybrid with a customer?
Well, the large language model can be a way of suggesting code for a coder. It can be a way of suggesting connections, possibly between applications. It can be doing some bulk processing for suggestions. But when it actually comes time to migrate from one database version to another database version, maintaining the integrity of a business intelligence application while you're doing a cloud migration. You know, you can't afford to have any errors in this. You also can't afford to have your business intelligence systems go down, because you'll be blind as a company. You need to guarantee the integrity and the visibility of the business intelligence queries that have been developed over the years while quickly migrating and modernizing in every way possible your underlying IT infrastructure. That's where we see a hybrid AI take hold. And I can say one more thing about that. You know, these systems have become very complex. And I don't think anybody is arguing that they're going to become simpler. You know, you can abstract simplifying frameworks for them, but they're really going to become more and more complex, more and more applications, more and more technologies to support those applications. It has become beyond any one individual's ability to reason. So that what you can't keep in your head, and you can't even keep in a team's head, proverbially, the concepts that maintain your IT infrastructure. So where a person or a team cannot conceptualize these complexities, an AI can. So what will happen, what is happening, is in these complex environments, the AI discovers the commonalities between all these systems. And that is a provable, solid place to implement these systems while guaranteeing system integrity.
Well, there's a big thought for those of us that are implementers. I want to shift gears a little bit because you're in a unique position, having spent some time in the Obama administration as a presidential innovation fellow. And I want to get a little bit of your thinking on where we're going to go from a policy perspective, because you've been in the rooms where we're talking about that kind of stuff. If I ask, where do you think we're going to land on AI policy?
Yeah, you know, I can say, first of all, I was grateful for that time that I had during the Obama administration. And you know, my wife reminds me that my business card would have been a great asset when I was single. It was funny. It was fun to look at. And I've got really good experiences, good memories of the very smart people around the table. And we all feel confident today from the people I know still doing that work, that we are in good hands. We worked on both forward-looking research for coordinating the executive branch, including defense, including energy, and some forward-looking thinking and frameworks for regulation. That latter part has really benefited from ChatGPT being introduced. You know, I was yelling as loudly as I could, given my position, for the need for regulation and what that possibly might look like. But there's really nothing like the introduction of technology that looks like it affects your job to sharpen the mind. I think that deterministic AI is going to have a really strong place to play in addressing some of the issues that we find to be weaknesses of many of these AIs, bias, fraud detection, somehow corruption of information. I think that the ideas we had laid out 5, 6, 7 years ago are still germane today, which is that we need to have a demonstrated lineage of information, a demonstrated provenance of information in many of these complex systems. And that can be authenticated with deterministic AI. Something that has been advocated recently that I had supported and still support, it's just some degree of auditing of algorithms. Now, whether it's a zero trust framework like we have for credit scores today, or it's something else, I can certainly imagine that people like myself could be on either side of either submitting algorithms for consideration or reviewing algorithms under consideration, just to demonstrate that they do what they promised they would do. And in that, they can then be deployed in these critical environments where we cannot tolerate variances outside of our expectations. So those are some ways in which I think that regulation is going to be expressed in the short term. And I'm really happy with the people that I had worked with, being involved in those conversations.
Gotcha. That's helpful to think about that. And I want to ask a little bit of a follow-up. Is that a bit similar to the idea of the way the FDA looks at drugs and drug out, like some element of investigation to prove that the algorithm does what it says it does? Is that a way of thinking about the way you would envision that?
Yeah, I'm not sure it needs to be as heavyweight as the FDA. I think, you know, we have a variety of certification agencies for safety in transportation, air safety, trains, cars, also in some degree in telecommunications, also in energy. There's a lot of different standards for certification that we could put in place, and we can put the appropriate amount of weight for these systems. I think we have made a bet about the diligence that we've all thought was appropriate for the FDA, and that gives us an outcome such as it does. It takes 10 years to bring a drug to market, and I don't see it being necessary for all sorts of automation algorithms, but maybe something like that is definitely what we're talking about here.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I want to also have a little bit of fun with this. Let's play take out the crystal ball a little bit. And, and I'm almost going to let you say, like, which is easier to predict, 5 or 10 years out for kind of what we're dealing with from an AI and even robotics perspective? Which of those timelines are you comfortable giving us a sense of what it's going to look like a little further out?
2 years. I'm comfortable with 2 years.
So what are we looking at?
5 to 10 years, man. That's really tough. Really tough. And I can tell you why. I can tell you why, or at least give an example.
Please.
If you ask me in 1995, what the future of Star Trek's personal computers would look like, I could give you a general shape of them, from the Palm Pilot, and I could extrapolate from there. And maybe I could actually come up with something that resembled the smartphones of 2005. So only, 10 years later. But I really would have a very difficult time, and it would kind of strain the credulity of anybody that is going to try to claim that today, that I could have predicted the rise of app developer as a job, let alone influencer as a job. The side effects of some of these technologies are just often unimaginable.
All right. So then 2 years, what do you think it's going to look like 2 years out?
Very soon, very soon. I think we are going to have AI agents acting on our behalf to interact with other AIs. This, I think, is happening now. You're seeing the beginnings, this kind of gestation period of all of us experimenting with using AIs as personal assistants more and more. And it's very quickly going to become difficult to interact with all the information that is then generated by other people's AIs. The response will be an AI of our own, not only to interact and interpret the AI-generated content coming at us, but also to protect us, because there's going to be a concomitant expansion from bad actors, against which we need to have a shield. And that AI shield on, that's personal, I think will be a natural next step. And 2 years is a comfortable timeline.
All right. I'm going to ask sort of one last thing that I want to get a little bit of insight. I've proposed on the show, and I want to get your reaction to this, the idea that particularly smaller organizations are going to need help with their data management. And this is the kind of service that's going to need to be focused on. I think AI feels ripe for this. What's your take on that service offering for most small and mid-sized organizations?
I think that many of the technologies that we have today are going to be outsourced more and more. I can definitely see that happening. I mean, there is as much as we just talked about complexity increasing, there's also a tendency towards simplifying what's already around. So I can definitely see there being an increased need for service providers over the coming years, because people don't want to deal with this IT system on their own. It's a pain.
Well, there's certainly going to be a need for all of us going forward. Eric, appreciate your time. Thanks for joining me today.
It's been a good time, Dave. Thanks for having me.
The Business of Tech is written and produced by me, Dave Sobel, under ethics guidelines posted at businessof.tech. Like the content? Support the show at patreon.com/MSPradio or buy our Why Do We Care merch at businessof.tech. If you want to reach our listeners, visit MSPradio.com/engage.
Part of the MSP Radio Network.